All right, everybody, welcome back to AI Unchained. We've got a spicy one today. The crypto world never sleeps, apparently neither do the banks, and we've got two stories that might tell you exactly where digital finance is headed.
Or where it might run straight into a wall. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Already with the brakes. I'm just saying, today's headline is Morgan Stanley stepping into the ring with Coinbase. When a trillion-dollar Wall Street giant starts circling crypto infrastructure, that's not a small signal. This could be huge.
Hold on, though. Wall Street circling crypto and actually transforming finance are two very different things. Big banks love the revenue, but they also love control. If Morgan Stanley moves in, the flip side is we could see the same centralized gatekeeping crypto was supposed to escape.
Maybe, but that's exactly why it's exciting. Institutional rails plus crypto liquidity? That's the kind of combination that unlocks the next wave of adoption. I'm bullish on this.
And I'm not so sure. Every cycle we hear, institutions are here, and then retail ends up holding the bag when things unwind.
Okay, fair. But before we jump into that debate, we have to talk about something interesting from past episodes. Remember April 18th when we talked about Schwab potentially going all in on crypto custody?
Yeah, and you said, and I quote, "This is the moment traditional finance realizes it can't ignore crypto anymore."
And now Morgan Stanley is making moves around Coinbase. I mean, that's the exact pattern.
Maybe. But we also flagged something on April 24th around restructuring in crypto-adjacent companies. Remember the Redwood Materials story? The point was that big structural shifts in finance create winners and casualties at the same time.
Sure, but that's how disruption works.
And on May 1st, we talked about transparency problems in AI companies, which becomes relevant again today because there's a separate controversy brewing. AI chatbots potentially leaking user chats to companies like Meta, TikTok, and Google.
Wait. So now our AI assistants might be gossiping behind our backs?
That's one way to put it.
Amazing. The robots finally learn to talk, and the first thing they do is snitch to big tech.
Or more realistically, developers embedding analytics tools without realizing they're transmitting sensitive user prompts.
That's less funny, but more concerning.
Exactly.
So here's the lineup today. First, Morgan Stanley stepping toward Coinbase and what that means for crypto's next phase. Second, a major infrastructure shakeup. Solve Protocol ditching Layer 0 and moving $700 million in tokenized Bitcoin tech over to Chainlink.
Which raises a real question about who actually controls the plumbing of DeFi.
And finally, we've got the privacy controversy. Whether your friendly AI chatbot might be quietly sharing your conversations with half of Silicon Valley.
I suspect we're going to disagree quite a bit today.
I mean, I think we're about to witness the financial system merge with crypto rails.
And I think we might just be watching old institutions absorb the technology and reshape it in their own image.
See? Perfect setup. Let's get into it. So this one caught my eye. TikTok just got approval for a $25 billion data center expansion in Thailand. That's massive. We're talking about servers, storage, compute capacity spread across Bangkok and surrounding provinces. And Thailand's government basically said, yeah, come build the digital backbone here. I'm bullish on this. This could be huge for Southeast Asia's tech ecosystem.
Hold on, though. A $25 billion data center project from TikTok? That's not just infrastructure. That's geopolitics. TikTok is owned by ByteDance, which means Chinese influence in critical digital infrastructure. Governments in the US and Europe are already nervous about TikTok data. Now they're building giant regional data hubs?
Sure. But let's zoom out. Southeast Asia is one of the fastest growing internet regions on the planet. 700 million people, tons of mobile first users. If your TikTok and your user base there is exploding, you need local servers. Otherwise, everything routes halfway across the world and the app feels slow.
I get the latency argument. Data centers closer to users make apps faster. But $25 billion isn't just make TikTok load quicker. That scale means massive AI workloads, content processing, recommendation systems, probably commerce infrastructure. That's strategic infrastructure.
Exactly. And that's the opportunity. Thailand is basically trying to become the Singapore of AI infrastructure for mainland Southeast Asia. The government approved 6 projects totaling about $29 billion, and TikTok's chunk alone is 842 billion baht. They're clearly saying, we want hyperscale compute here.
But the flip side is energy. Data centers are power hogs. The announcement literally mentioned strengthening power supply capacity and expanding clean energy. That's code for, these things eat electricity. If Thailand doesn't scale renewable power fast enough, you're talking about massive grid strain.
True, but that's happening everywhere. Look at the US. AI data centers are driving nuclear and solar investments. And here's where it gets interesting. NVIDIA is investing up to $2.1 billion into the data center developer Iron. That's the other signal in this story. The AI compute land grab is global.
Wait. Those two things together actually make me more cautious. When NVIDIA money is flowing into data center developers and TikTok is building $25 billion facilities in Southeast Asia, what you're seeing is an AI compute bubble forming around infrastructure.
Or you're seeing the early phase of the AI industrial revolution. Think about it. Data centers used to be boring warehouses full of servers. Now they're basically AI factories. They produce intelligence, recommendations, ads, training models, generative AI.
AI factories is a very Jack way to describe it.
But tell me I'm wrong.
I'll say it differently. They're expensive electricity converters that turn power into probabilistic answers. The economics still have to work. TikTok can justify it because of advertising and commerce. But if everyone builds hyperscale facilities at once, utilization becomes a real question.
I actually think TikTok's angle is smarter than people realize. The article mentioned digital literacy and e-commerce training for Thai entrepreneurs. TikTok Shop is exploding in Southeast Asia. This infrastructure isn't just for video. It's powering a shopping ecosystem.
That part one do find interesting. TikTok turning into a logistics and commerce platform across Southeast Asia is plausible. But again, if the infrastructure belongs to a Chinese company, countries may start asking the same questions the US is asking. Where does the data go?
Thailand seems pretty comfortable with it. They want the investment. $25 billion building servers, networking, facilities. That's jobs, energy projects, telecom upgrades.
Today, they're comfortable. Governments change their minds quickly when digital sovereignty becomes an issue.
Fair. But here's my big takeaway. The center of gravity for internet infrastructure is shifting. For years, everything clustered in the US and Western Europe. Now you've got hyperscale data center builds in Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia.
I agree with that part. Southeast Asia is the next battleground for cloud, AI, and social platforms. I'm just not convinced TikTok will be the one everyone wants running the servers.
So you're skeptical of TikTok owning the pipes?
Exactly.
I'm bullish on the region becoming an AI infrastructure powerhouse.
Okay, that's fair. We agree on the trend, disagree on who should control it.
And speaking of the AI infrastructure race, the NVIDIA angle we mentioned actually opens a bigger question about who's really winning the data center boom. Because the companies selling the chips might be the ones capturing most of the value. Okay, this one caught my eye. Morgan Stanley just launched spot crypto trading on E-Trade, fees at 50 basis points. That's cheaper than Coinbase, cheaper than Schwab, even competitive with Robinhood. And here's the kicker. E-Trade has about 8.6 million clients who'll get access later this year. I'm bullish on this. This could be huge for mainstream crypto adoption.
Hold on, though. It's huge for Morgan Stanley, maybe. I'm not convinced it's great news for the crypto ecosystem overall, because what you're describing is TradFi basically eating crypto's lunch.
But that was always the end game. Think about it. People already trust Morgan Stanley with their retirement accounts, their brokerage accounts. If those same investors can click one button and buy Bitcoin next to their Apple stock, that's friction disappearing.
Or it's consolidation. Let's pump the brakes a bit. Coinbase built an entire industry around crypto-native infrastructure. Now, Morgan Stanley comes in, plugs into Zero Hash for back-end rails, and suddenly they're offering the same service cheaper. That's classic Wall Street. Commoditize the thing, crush the margins.
Yeah, but fee compression is actually good for users. Coinbase charging 60 basis points, Schwab at 75, Robinhood spreads up to 95 sometimes. Morgan Stanley at 50 BPS forces everyone lower. That's exactly what happened with Bitcoin ETFs. Remember that race to the bottom on fees?
True, but there's a flip side. If trading becomes pretty dirt cheap everywhere, like that Bloomberg analyst said, the differentiation disappears. Then the advantage goes to whoever already owns the customer relationship. And, spoiler alert, that's not Coinbase.
Maybe not today. But wait. Coinbase still has the crypto-native ecosystem, staking, DeFi integrations, custody services. Morgan Stanley's E-Trade rollout is Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana. That's it. It's like the crypto starter pack.
That's all most people want, though.
For now.
No, seriously. Retail investors aren't waking up thinking, I need access to 400 tokens and a yield farm. They want the blue chips. BTC, ETH, H, maybe Sol. Morgan Stanley picked exactly those three.
Okay, but here's why I still think this is bullish. When institutions like Morgan Stanley say the strategy is, what was the quote, disintermediating the disintermediators? That means they believe crypto trading is a core financial service now, not a niche product.
I'll give you that. The psychological shift matters. When a trillion-dollar bank puts crypto directly inside a brokerage platform, it's basically saying, this isn't experimental anymore.
Exactly. And think about the timing. CME is about to launch 24/7 crypto futures trading on May 29th. That's another TradFi giant adapting to crypto's always-on markets.
But you're ignoring the competitive bloodbath coming. Coinbase's whole business model relies heavily on trading fees. If Morgan Stanley, Robinhood, Schwab, and others all race to the bottom, Coinbase's margins get squeezed hard.
Unless they pivot more into infrastructure.
Maybe. But that's a tough transition for a public company already priced like a growth platform.
I still think the bigger story is distribution. 6 million plus E-Trade clients suddenly getting a crypto buy button. That's millions of people who never bothered to open a Coinbase account.
Or millions of people who already have crypto exposure through ETFs. Don't forget that part. A lot of traditional investors are perfectly happy buying the Bitcoin ETF in their brokerage account.
Fair, but direct ownership matters. ETFs are like renting exposure. Spot trading means you actually own the asset.
For crypto purists, yes. For the average investor, I'm not so sure they care.
So we agree on one thing. This is Wall Street stepping directly onto the crypto exchange turf.
Yeah, and the real question is whether that legitimizes crypto or just turns it into another low-margin brokerage product.
Either way, Coinbase executives are definitely paying attention today.
And probably recalculating their fee schedule.
Speaking of institutions reshaping markets, there's another piece of news that's a little more existential for crypto security, and it involves quantum computing. Okay, this one caught my eye. Solve Protocol is moving more than $700 million worth of tokenized Bitcoin infrastructure off Layer 0 and onto Chainlink CCIP. And look, this is right after that $292 million Kelp DAO exploit tied to Layer 0 bridge tech. Here's why this matters. The cross-chain bridge layer is basically the plumbing of crypto. If that plumbing breaks, the whole DeFi house floods.
Hold on, though. The key phrase there is basically the plumbing. And plumbing failures are exactly what we keep seeing. Bridges have been some of the most catastrophic points of failure in crypto. You had the $622 million Ronin bridge hack in 2022. Now the Kelp DAO incident around $292 million. And even the $230 million WazirX hack last year involved bridge infrastructure. At some point, we have to admit the architecture itself might be the problem.
Wait. Yes, bridges have been hacked, but that's exactly why this move is interesting. Solve is standardizing everything on Chainlink's cross-chain interoperability protocol, CCIP. Chainlink's whole pitch is defense in-depth security, meaning multiple layers of validation instead of one central bridge contract that can get drained.
Every bridge says that. Every single one says, we have better security, defense in-depth, decentralized validators. Then 6 months later, someone finds the exploit path. The real issue is you're moving assets across chains that don't naturally talk to each other. That's inherently fragile.
But the opportunity here is massive if they get it right. Think about what Solve actually does. They tokenize Bitcoin, so you can take BTC, which normally just sits there, and deploy it into DeFi across multiple blockchains to earn yield. That's trillions of dollars of potential capital if Bitcoin holders ever fully participate.
And it only works if the bridge holding the wrapped BTC doesn't get hacked. That's the whole problem. If $700 million in tokenized Bitcoin is sitting in infrastructure that depends on cross-chain messaging, you've created a giant honeypot.
Sure, but the market is responding rationally. You get a $292 million exploit tied to Layer 0 infrastructure. and immediately project start reassessing risk. Solve basically said, okay, security review time, we're switching. That's healthy competition in infrastructure.
Or it's musical chairs. Today, it's layer zero getting blamed. Tomorrow, if something goes wrong with CCIP, everyone migrates again. The deeper question is whether bridging assets across ecosystems is fundamentally safer than just keeping them on Bitcoin.
But if you keep them on Bitcoin, they don't do anything. That's the whole DeFi argument. Bitcoin is a $1+ trillion asset that mostly just sits idle. Platforms like SolveBTC let you deploy it into lending, liquidity pools, structured products.
Yeah, but Bitcoin people would say that's the point. Security over experimentation. The minute you wrap BTC and ship it across chains, you inherit every smart contract risk from Ethereum, every validator risk from whatever chain you're touching, and every bridge vulnerability.
Okay, but here's where I'm bullish. Chainlink has spent years building this reputation with oracles and infrastructure used by big institutions. CCIP is designed with risk management layers, rate limits, independent node networks, monitoring systems. If one system detects something weird, it can halt transfers.
The flip side is that halting transfers means someone has centralized kill switches, which crypto people also hate.
Fair point. But institutions entering crypto will actually want those safeguards.
Maybe, but let's not pretend this solves the bridge problem. The biggest crypto hacks in history are still bridges. Ronin, $622 million. Poly Network, $600 million. Wormhole, $320 million. Now, Kelp BAO infrastructure getting drained for nearly $300 million. It's the most attacked surface area in the ecosystem.
Which is exactly why whoever builds the safest cross-chain layer wins huge. Think of it like TCP/IP for blockchains. If Chainlink's CCIP becomes the default interoperability layer, that's a massive strategic position.
I'll push back there. The crypto industry has tried to crown a universal interoperability layer for years. Cosmos, IBC, Polkadot, Layer 0, Wormhole, now CCIP. None of them have become the standard yet.
Yet,
maybe. But moving $700 million is still a statement. Projects don't migrate infrastructure like that unless they're nervous.
And that nervousness is forcing better security standards. So, weirdly, the hacks might be accelerating the maturation of the system.
Or they're proving the system is inherently risky. Both interpretations are still on the table.
Okay, I'll take the optimistic side. This is infrastructure Darwinism. Weak bridges get exposed, stronger ones survive.
And I'll take the cautious side. We keep calling them bridges, but a lot of them are closer to giant vaults with target signs on them.
Fair. And speaking of infrastructure battles in crypto, the competition between protocols trying to become the backbone of the ecosystem is heating up in a few other places too. Okay, this one caught my eye because it sounds small, but it's actually kind of wild. Researchers found that major AI chatbots, ChatGPT, Claude, Grok, Perplexity, have more than 13 third-party trackers embedded in the pages. We're talking Meta, Google, TikTok analytics tools. And in some cases, those trackers could receive information about the chat itself.
Hold on, though. Let's pump the brakes before people panic. Trackers on web pages are everywhere. News sites have them. E-commerce has them. The internet basically runs on analytics scripts. The real question is, are they actually getting the chat content or just page metadata?
Well, that's the spicy part. The researchers said sometimes the conversation URL itself gets leaked. And if that URL is publicly accessible, the link basically is the conversation. Anyone with the link can read it.
Right, but that depends on how the platform structures its links. A lot of apps generate random IDs. It's not like Meta engineers are sitting there manually reading your prompts about sourdough recipes.
Sure, but imagine you're using AI for work. You're pasting in internal strategy docs, or code, or legal questions. And the URL of that chat gets piped to an ad tracker. Even if the ad company isn't actively reading it, the potential exposure is there. That's a big deal.
The flip side is that this research doesn't necessarily show deliberate data harvesting. It might just be sloppy web design. A tracking script logs the page URL automatically. That's pretty standard behavior across the web.
Wait. Except Grok apparently had the worst case. Guest conversations are public by default, no login required to read them. And the study says TikTok's tracker was receiving verbatim message content through Open Graph metadata.
Yeah, that part is rough. If that's accurate, that's more than sloppy. That's a product design failure, especially when people are increasingly treating these chatbots like private assistants.
Exactly. And here's why this matters long term. AI chat is replacing search. People ask these systems extremely personal questions, health stuff, work problems, relationship advice. The data sensitivity is way higher than a Google search box.
I agree with that premise. But I think the bigger issue is expectations. People assume these tools are private therapy sessions. They're not. They're web apps connected to giant cloud systems. Data flows around.
But that expectation gap is the opportunity. Companies that build privacy-first AI could win big. Imagine a chatbot that guarantees zero third-party trackers, encrypted chats, local processing. That's a killer product.
I'm not so sure. Most users say they care about privacy, but then pick the free product that works best. We've seen that movie before.
Maybe historically, yes. But AI might shift it because the inputs are way more sensitive. If enterprises start auditing these leaks, suddenly no trackers becomes a sales feature.
Enterprise, I buy. Consumer, I'm skeptical. The average user isn't reading network requests in their browser.
True, but regulators might. If it's confirmed that companies like Meta or TikTok trackers can indirectly access AI conversations, that's catnip for EU regulators.
Oh, absolutely. The EU is going to have a field day with this kind of architecture, especially if the study is right that none of these trackers are clearly disclosed to users.
And that brings up a bigger question. Are we about to see AI privacy labels? Like nutrition labels, but for chatbots.
That would actually be useful. Something that says data stored, trackers present, training usage, retention period. Right now, it's a black box.
I'm bullish on that idea. Transparency becomes a competitive advantage.
Or it becomes a compliance nightmare. But either way, the era of just paste your secrets into a chatbot might be ending.
Or evolving. Because the moment people realize their chats might leak, that's when the market for secure AI explodes.
Assuming the average user notices at all.
Fair. But speaking of companies pushing boundaries with AI infrastructure, there's another development this week that might actually change how these models get built in the first place. All right, that's a wrap for today. We covered a lot. AI models getting faster and cheaper, the new wave of AI-native startups raising serious money, and the political tug of war over how much regulation this space should actually have. And look, stepping back, this could be huge. The cost curves are dropping, the tools are getting better, and I'm bullish that we're still in the early innings of what AI can unlock for businesses and creators.
Hold on, though. Early innings also means early mistakes. We talked about the hype cycle, the funding frenzy, and governments scrambling to regulate something they barely understand. The flip side of all this acceleration is instability. Companies are building on tech that changes every 6 months, and policymakers are reacting in real time. That's not exactly a stable foundation.
Sure, but that's literally how every major tech shift starts. The internet looked chaotic in the 90s, too. Here's why this matters. The combination of cheaper compute, better models, and distribution through existing apps means AI adoption could move way faster than previous waves.
Or it could hit friction. We're already seeing lawsuits, data concerns, and enterprise hesitation. And politically? AI is quickly becoming a geopolitical tool. When governments get involved, things slow down.
Wait. Sometimes regulation actually accelerates adoption. If companies know the rules, they build faster.
Sometimes. Other times, it freezes innovation. Europe might be a case study in that.
Okay, fair. Maybe the US and Asia move faster and Europe becomes the cautious test case.
Now that's a prediction I can live with.
Speaking of predictions, let's do our end of episode calls.
All right, go for it.
My bold prediction. Within 12 months, at least one AI-native company built in the last 3 years will cross a $100 billion valuation. Not an old tech company pivoting. An actual AI-first startup. This could be huge.
I'm not so sure. My prediction goes the other direction. Within the next year, we'll see a major AI backlash moment, either a high-profile lawsuit, regulatory crackdown, or a big enterprise deployment that goes sideways and makes headlines. something that forces the industry to slow down and rethink guardrails.
So you're predicting the brakes.
I'm predicting turbulence.
I still think the plane lands ahead of schedule.
We'll see.
And hey, quick callback. Remember when I said earlier this year that AI co-pilots would quietly become default features in most software? Feels like that's already happening.
I'll give you partial credit on that one. Adoption is happening, but usage depth is still questionable.
Fair. Jury's still out.
So we agree to disagree. Again.
That's the show. Thanks to everyone listening to AI Unchained. We appreciate you hanging out with us every week.
And keep sending us the stories and trends you're seeing. Half the interesting signals come from listeners working inside these companies.
Next time, we'll be watching the AI startup funding wave, the next round of model releases, and whether governments start coordinating or competing on AI policy.
And we'll also be looking for the gaps between the hype and reality.
I'm betting the upside wins.
I'm watching the risks.
Either way, it's going to be interesting.
See you next time.
Thanks for listening to AI Unchained.